Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:10 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is November 3rd, and I thought we'd kick off with 10-year treasuries. They're up nearly 5 basis points, still above the trend mean, continuing to advance, and right in the region of the peak from back in June. And it does beg the big question, and when is the Federal Reserve going to act in order to try and bring yields back down? Because it's looking increasingly like a base formation completion. And base formation completions and are generally the end of a bear trend, or I guess in yields perspective, it's the beginning of a bear trend. We're on the cusp of potentially breaking a 2-year downtrend here. And this represents a significant pickup in the potential for significant difficulties for governments, not just in the USA but elsewhere, because treasury yields are unlikely to be the only yields that rise. And how are they going to fund their deficits when the cost of new debt continues to rise and debt servicing costs appreciate? Well, considering the fact that if the 10-year Treasury yield were to go from 50 basis points to 250 basis points, it would add $100 billion to the servicing cost of the US debt. And that's a very significant sum. It would greatly impinge upon the ability of the government to fund necessary programs. And it would also necessitate a fiscal austerity program. And there is just no way that the population is willing to countenance even the prospect of fiscal austerity. So someone would be asked to pay the difference. About $100 billion? Well, isn't it handy that companies like Apple and Google have got that in cash sitting on the sidelines? So they would obviously become a potential target. Then there are trillions that are circulated around the world every year in terms of the amount of money offshore. The USA itself is a significant beneficiary of the global offshore savings, and the determination by business owners in particular to shelter as much of their income as possible from taxation internationally. Well, that's also a potential source of income for cash-hungry governments. Then we have the potential that there would be wealth taxes, or there could be taxes on second homes, or there could be luxury taxes. Then, of course, the question is, what's considered a luxury? Then all of these questions are rather painful for any administration, and it is so much easier to simply print the money. So it's very likely that we are going to have additional stimulus, regardless of who wins the election in the USA today. It also greatly enhances the potential that the Federal Reserve is going to act in an aggressive manner to start buying bonds. They have concentrated the majority of their purchases so far at the short end of the curve. One thing that I think has been particularly true over the course of the last decade or 12 years has been that every time they've engaged in quantitative easing, yields have risen. But it is worth considering that when we look at the fact that yields have gone up every single time they've engaged in quantitative easing, well, it was because they were buying short-dated bonds, and they let the long end of the curve take care of itself. Well, short-dated bonds are also rising, and at 16 basis points, going up even one looks like an upward dynamic. When we look at it on a log scale chart, then we can clearly see that there are base formation characteristics. So there is the potential that we're going to move into a period of yield curve control. I've been talking about this like a broken record now for more than 6 weeks, but ever since the Federal Reserve said that They are not going to engage in yield curve control. The yield curve has behaved as if they are. And it's back above the 70 basis point level. This is an uptrend. We continue to see that there's a sequence of higher reaction lows, higher highs, and it's breaking higher now. Well, this represents something that is going to need to be addressed by the central bank. It's only a question of when, not a question of if, because there is just no way that the federal government can tolerate a higher cost of borrowing. And particularly with the kind of restive social environment that we've had over the last year. And against that background, that's part of the reason why we've seen a rebound in the stock market, because the majority of stock market investors have reached the conclusion that it's inevitable we're going to get additional stimulative action. But what's particularly interesting is that it is the small caps and mid caps have generally been doing better. And the small caps today were up in a more dynamic fashion and finished close to the high of the day. And this is, I think, rather encouraging that we still have a sequence of higher reaction lows. The rather stiff downward dynamic that we saw last week has not been followed through on. If we get additional upside follow through the balance of the week, well, then it will have broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and that would be really quite positive. When we look at the transportation index, it's bounced from the 11,000 level, and it needed to do that. It was really testing the resolve of investors at the end of last week, but we've seen a really quite impressive bounce over the last 2 days. So that is really quite positive. When we then think just simply about the Dow Jones Industrials, it's arguably not such a great indicator of industrial activity today like it was 100 years ago, but it is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. The S&P 500 is also right in the region of its the lows from September. It hasn't quite unwound all of the overextension relative to the trend mean, but it's done most of it. And this doesn't look like anything more than some consolidation in the region of the previous peak, at least so far. The one question, though, is how well is the Nasdaq going to be able to hold its gains? It had one of the smaller rebounds in here today. It's been underperforming over the course of the last few weeks, and part of the reason for that is because it's still got this wide overextension. But I think the clear conclusion, or at least the conclusion that is begging to be drawn, is that there have been an awful lot of sales have been brought forward into the technology sector, and that has front-loaded their outperformance this year. It's unlikely they're going to grow at the same pace next year. We're at a rather pivotal period for markets, because the market is pricing in the potential that we're going to have additional stimulus, and that the threat from the coronavirus is not going to be as onerous as the media is making out. And yet the media is crammed full of these stories about the rising number of cases, second waves and third waves, and the rising number of fatalities. But I thought that this was a really very good article in El País, and I'm just making trying to find it. It's got some wonderful graphics about the transmission of coronavirus in a bar or a classroom. And we can see that their conclusion is that wearing masks isn't particularly effective, ventilation is more effective, that the kinds of vapors that people produce can be extraordinary. But then I thought these were really very compelling ways of looking at the data and thinking about how the infection can pass between people. It's obviously something that hasn't got an awful lot of I think coverage really in terms of just how are people getting infected. But one thing that I thought was particularly interesting is that when they make their conclusions, and you can see that in all of their way of thinking, that everybody is getting infected. However, when we think about what underlying assumptions are they making? Well, I thought the first one was that they're thinking it's the general population, but they're relying on some uncertain numbers. The first is they don't actually know how much infectious virus any one person emits. The second is that they are assuming that nobody has an innate resistance. Well, that's extraordinarily unlikely, and it could be as high as a third of people have got some form of innate resistance. Now, this is, I think, one of the more important points, that there's this conclusion or there's an assumption that everybody is equally likely to be infected and that everyone, 100% of people, will eventually be infected. And that is what's informing the kind of commentary that we're getting globally. But if that's not correct, then the kind of action that we're getting in the stock market is probably much more confirmatory of what reality really is like. The simple fact of the matter is, I've been going to the post office every single day of this year, and I haven't been infected. If this really were as virulent as, and I must say that the post office I go to isn't particularly well ventilated. It's a very deep room. You have to walk at least 30 meters inside the building, often queuing with upwards of 30, 40, or 50 people, and then you're in there for anything up to 45 minutes. I haven't become infected, and I've had no symptoms, and I haven't seen that anyone working there has either. So these are, I think, important characteristics that if we can go to supermarkets where people are standing around cheek by jowl and that they are not becoming infected, then the market is probably reflecting reality and responding more to the quantity of money that is being produced in order to support the economy while lockdowns continue to be imposed. We are likely to see a great deal of news coming through in terms of vaccines in the not so distant future. Now, we were anticipating, for example, that Pfizer may come through with some data at the beginning of this month. It may be pushed towards the end of the month or maybe even into December. Moderna could be as early as the middle of this month or perhaps into the end of the year. AstraZeneca could be any time before the end of the year. Johnson and Johnson probably at the end of this year or next year. But it's increasingly likely that one of these is likely to deliver some form of good news. So that, I think, is also being priced into the market. When we then think about other mid-cap sectors, because mid-caps do appear to be outperforming, well, then the FTSE 250 was in positive territory in here today as well. And then when we think about the MDAX in Germany, it's also bounced from the region of its trend mean. If we look at small caps in Japan, the second section index is still weak and it hasn't quite yet been able to break its sequence of lower rally highs. Now, when we think about what's likely in terms of the currency markets, the yen was somewhat stronger in here today, but the Bank of Japan looks to be quite clearly willing to support, or I guess to knock back the yen every time it gets to the 104 level. The Bank of Japan has also been very vocal in saying that they're not going to allow the yield to exceed 0.1 of 1%, but their resolve is likely to be tested in the not so distant future. Over the course of this year, they have been defending the 5 basis point level. Well, we're very close to that right now. There is the potential that the UK is going to go with negative interest rates. The bond market has been pricing that in, but the bond yield on the 10-year at least was higher in here today. There's the clear scope that we're going to have more inflation. And we may be in a period of time similar to the 1930s, where there was yield curve control against an inflationary backdrop. And that's, I think, potentially what we're looking at, because governments simply can't afford to pay back the debt. They're going to have to inflate it away, and they may well try and control yields in order to do that. I think we're starting to see some recognition of that in the gold price. Gold has been higher now for 3 days, but not in an especially dynamic manner. It hasn't quite yet been able to do enough to clearly confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term, but there is certainly potential that that may be the case. One of the factors that has helped to contain inflationary pressures this year has been the oil price, but it had an upside key day reversal yesterday, followed through on the upside in here today. It's now testing the region of the trend mean. If it can sustain a move back above the $45 area, well, then it will have broken the downward bias, confirmed a low, and the recovery scenario will still be very much intact. The big question from the perspective of investors is not so much about how much further oil prices are going to rally, but how much regulatory obstacles or how much of an obstacle is are regulations going to be for the major oil companies? Because with the Green New Deal being pioneered by Europe and China, then they're going to be very keen to increase roadblocks for the fossil fuel sector while providing extraordinary subsidies for the renewables sector. That's already, I think, been priced into a number of these shares, which is why they exceeded the lows posted in March. But they are still cash flow positive, and Royal Dutch Shell, for example, has increased its dividend. Then, when we think about where the potential is, well, they have the scope to invest in cleaner forms of energy, or for example, as utilities in their own right, to provide the electricity for the green revolution. If they can do that in a reasonably clean fashion, they might be able to offset some of the carbon credits they're going to have to pay. But oil prices doing better, and the potential that this infrastructure build for a Green New Deal could take anything up to a decade, then that does suggest that there is scope at least for the oil companies to do better from here. And some are doing better than others. Chevron, at least now, it looks increasingly likely that it has put in a higher reaction low. Well, then when we look at the industrial sector, and rather than thinking about the Dow Jones, but rather the S&P 500 industrials, it looks really quite similar to the Russell 2000. And there's clear scope here that this doesn't look like anything other than some consolidation in the region of the previous peak. So there's potential that we're going to see a transition here from the high technology sector and the stay-at-home champions into recovery candidates. That's, I think, going to be a significant move next year. And when we think about the dollar, the euro has bounced from the 116 area. The pound was also stronger in here today against the dollar. So it's back above the 130 area. The USA has got the clearest route to devaluing its currency, and that's likely to be beneficial for emerging markets. But it's always going to come down to governance when we look at emerging markets. The very significant pullback we had in Alibaba today is indicative of the lack of improving standards of governance in China. Now, they're throwing an enormous amount of money at trying to develop the domestic economy, and they are trying also to to attract foreign capital. But sometimes it really is about return of capital, then return on capital. And the problem with China is that they can change the rules at a whim overnight. That's exactly what's happened to Alibaba. Until yesterday, they were expecting to have a $35 billion IPO, the biggest in history. And as of today, it's cancelled. So, and that was all because of a speech that Alibaba gave last week, which heaped opprobrium on the conventional banking sector. That hubris was his undoing. So he's missed out on this massive IPO. But the reality is that he was neutered as early as 2014, when he was in many respects forced to put his fortune into trust. And trusts in China are not like trusts in the rest of the world. So the reality is that the Communist Party already has full control of Alibaba. And by very publicly stating the competitive advantage that Ant Financial has, and they've enjoyed for a decade, and been able to grow because they can flout regulations, well, that's now over. And there's the potential that Ant Financial could disappear. And it's going to have a much more difficult time if it has to comply with the really quite onerous banking regulations that every other bank in China has to abide by, and not least in terms of reserve requirements. So that's, I think, a big source of potential uncertainty for anybody investing in China. But the stock market was in positive territory today, and it was led higher in many respects by anything that has a yield, but potentially also the kinds of companies that would benefit from not having to compete with companies like Ant Financial or WeChat Pay. When we look at the Chinese banking sector, it's been underperforming, and it was also in positive territory, although not quite able to hold its gain in here today. But over the course of the last 5 years, it's gone nowhere, despite the fact that there has been this incredible amount of state money pumped into it in order to combat the non-performing loans problem. And this non-performing loans problem, which is a vestige of the drive to be a 10% GDP growth country for as long as possible, isn't something that's going to go away anytime soon. These are some of the challenges that China has against a background where they are pulling out all the stops to try and compete internationally. Then when we think about countries that depend on China, well, Australia is obviously one of those. The Aussie dollar was in positive territory in here today and held on to its gain all the way through the close, and has now broken the two-month sequence of lower rally highs. So we now have clear evidence of the 70-cent level holding. And I think that this is the break of a medium-term downtrend. We've seen some really quite acute weakness for the Aussie dollar earlier this year, and I think it's probably over. There's the clear scope that with the recovery in energy prices and in increasing demand for industrial resources, particularly copper, and potentially also aluminium, that commodity producers are likely to do better, and especially as we look at the infrastructure plans that most governments are going to put into play next year as they bet on reflation. I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.